You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
My funniest fact about Southampton is that they did a fundraiser to help save the club and they had to cancel it due to lack of interest.
Football. At the end of the day, football. It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
In a week where we talked about Portsmouth FC, we enjoyed lots of great telly. That is a reference you're going to be getting in about 35 minutes' time. So look forward to that. Welcome to episode 14 of Comedians Talking About Football. I am Sam Michael, here with you as always, your host. And my guest this week is Martin Ratton, talking about Portsmouth FC. Now, of course, we're going to cover the infamous season that was their 2007-2008 FA Cup winning season. But I've got a question for my listeners. Welcome, listeners, by the way. And new listeners as well. If you're new to the podcast, why not go back, check out the previous episodes. Follow us on social media as well. I'm going to throw that one in here. Instagram and Twitter, at ComTalkFootyPod. Anyway, we've got a question for the listeners, which is, now of course there's a lot to take in here, but I mean very kind of hypothetically. Portsmouth have had a lot of ups and a lot of downs in the last 10, 20 years. And my question to you is that their success that came in 2007-2008, which a lot of people would have forgotten about maybe, obviously not Pompey fans, but I mean, especially sort of younger fans will know, won't know that the likes of Crouch, the likes of Defoe were playing for them, Benjani, and they had a great season, but it came at a cost. And obviously that cost has now led to them down in the, they're in the third tier of English football. So my question to you is, would you rather do an Ipswich, and I'm only using Ipswich as an example, don't have a go at me, Ipswich, where they kind of lingered in the Championship for about 9 years, but they have always been financially secure, I'd say. Or would you take a big risk with your club, win the FA Cup, get into Europe, but even if it meant that failure following that would result in falling down a few divisions? Something for you to think about. I know it's a really kind of generic question, and from this episode you'll realise that there's so much more to it than just that. But I do put the question to Martin, so make of that what you will. It's a very difficult question to answer for a Portsmouth fan or anyone who's been through something like that, because it isn't just the club that suffers, it's obviously people's jobs, it's the community and yada yada yada. Anyway, I'm going to stop yapping and let's get straight into it. This is Comedians Talking About Football, episode 14, Martin Ratton talking about Portsmouth FC. Martin Ratton, thank you so much for coming on.
Mate, thanks for having me. It's good.
So we're going to talk about Portsmouth, and we've got quite a lot to talk about that, because as we're recording this in the year of our Lord, 2021, you've just sacked your manager. Jackett's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. When was it, yesterday or day before yesterday? I think it's time for him to go, to be honest. He's been there 4 years. And for the most part, the football mate, it's been so bad. It's been so bad. I'm not a glory fan of Portsmouth. I've seen us be crap all my life, apart from a little blip in the middle of the, you know, late 2000s where we had a good few seasons. But the football has been dire. It has been dire for years. And, you know, we want to win the league. I think we're a big team in that league. You know, I think we can get in the top two. But we don't want to get there like the way we are. Yeah, just hoofball up the top, no plan B, just awful, awful football. And I like Jacket. He seems like a good guy, but the quality of football and the no plan B option has been really bad.
I was going to say, I was quite shocked when I saw how long he'd been there. He joined in 2017. And you're right, it hasn't been all plain sailing for Portsmouth the last few years and everything. You know, I know you've won a trophy, but at the same time, you've dropped out of the Championship, and it's been very much League One football for a while. What is the kind of, because obviously you go back, you know, 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, you're in the Premier League, you're in Europe at that stage. And of course, we'll cover that in a bit, like the drop and everything. But what is it like to be a Portsmouth fan at the moment? How would you sum it up?
Tedious, I think is the best word, because I think there's still a bit of forgetting that we're in League One and we are only going to attract League One players. And we've still got a percentage of that fan base who, you know, I'm seeing things on the forums and on Twitter and things saying, oh, get Eddie Howe as manager, get, you know, Redknapp as manager. You know, these people, they're in cuckoo land. We're not going to get someone like that as much as we might like them. And it's represented in the players we've got. You know, they're League One players. Sometimes they're, you know, Ronaldo, and sometimes they are whatever the opposite of Ronaldo is. You know, and that's League One, isn't it? You know, every now and then you'll score a worldie, and then you'll just think, why are they not doing that week in, week out?
I was going to say, you've got quite a few good players. You know, like John Marquise is obviously top goal scorer this season, last season top goal scorer, Ronan Curtis, who I'm a big fan of, and he's an international as well. So for League One, I'd say, you know, you've got some really good players. And is there a slight frustration there, you think, that with these players that you've got, they might be League One, but they're top tier League One, that you haven't got them promoted yet? And do you think that's why Jacket finally went? Because he's had opportunity after opportunity. And do you think that really they should have gone up by now?
Yeah, I think that's the issue, is that by now we should have done it. Even with the squad we've got, I think that's the frustration, is that squad is good enough to get top two.
Right.
On a good, you know, good run. And obviously we've flunked the playoffs a couple of times, to be expected as a Pompey fan. Yeah, we do not win playoff games, that's a fact. But to try and get in the top two, I think we could have done it by now. And like you say, Curtis, he's a good player. He's a decent player. And the frustration now is that, you know, with contracts and the limited options that you can pay players, although I think they've stopped that cap now, we'll probably have to rebuild again. And that'll be another, probably, you know, another season in League One, followed by a push the year after that, I guess.
That is harsh. I mean, I suppose you're in a way you're in a good position because... Or are you? I don't know. I mean, I've been in this position before when you've got all the players who you think could take you up, but whether it's the management or something else in, you know, behind the scenes, that it doesn't happen. You kind of, there is that kind of, you feel like there's an easy option now where you think, well, if you get in another manager, they should or could be able to do the job. But sometimes it's more refreshing when the whole team is rubbish from top to bottom. And when you start getting a clear out, you think, right, we can have a fresh start. But I know what you mean. It seems to me that Portsmouth are in this position. There seems to be a lot of frustration from fans. And similarly, I don't know if you probably get fed up of this comparison, because you've very much been the antagonists in the Netflix series, Sunderland Till I Die. But you're very much, it's kind of similar. You could easily have made that Portsmouth Till I Die. Do you know what I mean? It's a very similar sort of story.
I'm pleased we didn't.
Yeah.
It's
a funny old game.
Comedians talking about football.
So that, where did it all start for you then, Martin, as a Pompey fan?
Early 90s, probably about 92, 93, I think. I'd had a few false starts going up to Brighton occasionally, just with a mate, but wasn't really, don't know, didn't really interest me that much. Went up to the Goldstone a couple of times. And then another mate took us to Portsmouth. I think it was 92, 93 season. And his dad was a Pompey fan, and we went up there from Eastbourne. And that was it. Got hooked. I think first time I went there, I was like, this is incredible. We lost 1-0 to Ipswich. Perfect debut, really, as a Pompey fan. You really you get to experience what the next 20 years are definitely going to look like. Ian Marshall scored with his big black curly hair. And that was it. And my dad used to work in Portsmouth. So he took me down there to the games early on as well. So, and that was it. And, yeah, from there, just mostly heartbreak, to be honest.
Oh, it's interesting you say that. not the heartbreak, obviously, but about how you kind of went to see Brighton play. Because they would be your nearest team at the time, wouldn't they, Brighton?
Yeah, they were. Yeah, yeah. I only really went there as an add-on, as a mate. Yeah. To kind of go, oh, we're going to watch some football. I was into football, but not didn't really support a team.
Yeah.
So it was just to watch some football, really, at the time.
I find that interesting because I always feel that, like, we had a guest on recently, Paul Cooper, who's the dad of Daisy May Cooper and Charlie Cooper.
Yeah.
And I was quite surprised to hear they were Fulham fans. And yeah. I said, you know, they've spent their whole life pretty much in you know, the West Country. And obviously there's a lot of references in this country to Swindon. So I assumed when I asked him, he'd be a Swindon fan. I was like, oh, no, we're Fulham fans. It's the way his son just one day said, Dad, I think I want to go and see Fulham play. And it's that feeling that it seems, and I felt this with me, with Reading, that it just seems to be your team picks you sometimes.
Yeah.
You can go to games.
He was a Cheltenham fan, my dad.
Oh, really?
And still is, obviously, a little bit. But he never tried to sort of force it on us to go and watch Charlton play. And my gran lived two doors away from Plough Lane. And, you know, a lot of my family all live in Wimbledon. So kind of, you know, they mocked us for being the southerner. But I was the first one born in the south, really. I had to support a southern team, really. Yeah. But, I don't know, Brighton... I've even watched Eastbourne play quite a few times, obviously, down with real local, different kind of football.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. I think I've seen Eastbourne play. I can't remember where it was. It might have been at Bristol Rovers. Don't ask me how or why I ended up seeing Eastbourne Bristol Rovers, but I think it was a pre-season friendly or something. But, yeah. So then, obviously, forward that, she's sort of early 90s, kind of a bit of a mixed time, probably not too dissimilar to how things are now. But then you go forward to kind of the late 90s and the early 2000s, and you're up in the Premier League. Do you remember that promotion?
Oh, mate, I remember it. I had the best years of my life there because I went to uni in Portsmouth.
Oh, nice.
For obvious reasons. someone can challenge me on this, but I believe I'm Portsmouth's youngest life season ticket holder. So,
really?
Yeah, so when we were going bust, one of the first times, Mandarich offered these life season tickets. And so you'd have one for life, basically. So I bought one of them and thinking, well, you know, doesn't matter what happens. You know, I'll buy it, see what happens. We go bust. If we don't, you know, could get it for a few years. Who knows? You know, you don't know what's going to happen. And 2 years later, we were, you know, fighting for promotion. And, you know, Harry and Jim, and I was at uni, and we got promoted in the first season that I was at uni, and that was just a blur.
Oh, fantastic.
Crazy. I mean, those were a crazy few years. I mean, obviously, we spent a lot of money in the Championship at the time. You know, we had that ITV digital money come in, and they really went for it with the squad. And we were, on our day, we were worlds apart in that league. You know, us and Leicester were obviously fighting for it at the time, but we were playing good football. You know, we'd never seen that before. You know, just things like if you hit a long ball up top, it sticks to the guy at the top. You know, like, it's not just then hoofed back into the middle of the park. You know, you knock it long, it stays long with your man. And just stuff like that, just unbelievable football. Paul Merson was just different class. God. Guy's a genius.
That's the thing. You picked up these sort of legendary players. And this became, in my mind, a bit of a theme for Portsmouth, that you picked up quite a few. I mean, you had some really good young players. So if we fast forward to sort of 2007, 2008, you know, you had players like, you know, Glenn Johnson coming through, and, you know, but a lot of players kind of went to, you could be described maybe as kind of coming to their later years. So to some extent, you know, David James, and then you had Kanu, and
we were either going to resurrect their career or they were going to retire. It was one of those two things, you know, and it was a good mix. I mean, we had, at one point, I remember just looking at the lineup, just laughing my head off. You know, we had Distan, Campbell, David James, Glenn Johnson. I mean, we had Diarra in the middle with Montari. Yeah. I mean, what on earth? You know, come on. Like, this is, you know, Fratton Park. What the hell's going on here? We knew we had no money, you know, or we knew that this was all getting funded by something because it's not getting funded by gate receipts. You know, there's 18,000 of us. We're not funding one player's wage a week, let alone this first 11. You know, so we all knew the money wasn't there, but no one cared.
Because it was surprising, especially, you know, obviously during the Redknapp years, you bought in some really good players, which, with all respect, some people would have thought at the time was a big kind of step back for a few of the players. So players like Jermaine Defoe coming from Tottenham, Peter Crouch from Liverpool. But, I mean, players like that, they were at Portsmouth for maybe a season, but went on. You know, Defoe, I think, went back to Tottenham, and I think Crouch went to Tottenham as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, some players, you're right, went there, really. It's almost like they were at these top clubs, but they went there, really made a name for themselves at Portsmouth, and then continued to have on these fantastic careers.
Yeah. I mean, they were a good player. I think we had a good, you know, 70% of that squad was still in their prime or coming towards it. And so, for a couple of seasons there, we were great. I mean, it was just unbelievable.
And then I suppose the big moment comes in 2008 when you win the FA Cup. That was against Cardiff, wasn't it? 1-0, Kanu goal?
Yeah. Kanu, he did the same against West Brom in the semi-final, almost the same sort of goal, the scrappy little tap-in from about a yard out.
That's it, yeah. I remember his celebration being really strange as well. Yeah, he sort of went to turn and turn back and then back again, yeah.
I was up in the gods for one of them, and I thought he was flagged offside because I thought, what is he doing? He's like, right, I didn't know what he was doing. I was like, what's this going on? I thought he was offside.
So you win the FA Cup. That's great. And obviously things aren't sort of better than they ever been for Portsmouth. Then it was a bit of a, if I remember right, there's a bit of a strange ending to the 2008 season, especially frustrating for me, because your 1-0 loss to Fulham meant that my team, Reading, got relegated. I'll never forget that. And also that season, I should mention as well, I have an excuse to get Reading into every podcast. It's what I get.
I know what
for.
You're going
to
say. Yeah.
It's the 7-4 game.
That was the most ridiculous game. I know Southampton are trying to, you know, be involved in the games with the most amount of goals, trying to lose like 9, 10, 11, 12 nil as much as they can. But that Reading game was, oh my God. I mean, it looked like any of us could score.
It was odd. It was so odd. And in preparation for today, I went back and watched it. I'm glad you got in a dig at Southampton as well, because I think by this point, John Matthews, our Southampton fan, had already got in two digs at Pompey. So I'm glad you're getting in. Feel free to drop them in all through the episode in the interest of fairness on the podcast.
They are pathetic. They're absolutely pathetic.
And then obviously, yeah, the 7-4 game. Yeah, nuts. I mean, there's some goals scored from
Dave Kitson scored from like 60 yards out or something.
That's
like,
it, just, yeah.
That's just ridiculous.
You got a young Shane Long scoring as well. And just, yeah, it was just an odd game. And it was what was really strange about it is, well, first of all, I think it was my first weekend I was at uni. When that game happened. So I remember it really well. And it was back when you couldn't access goals that easily. We didn't have tellies in our halls, really. Like, one would have it in a room, but we wouldn't all go in there to watch. We'd have to go around down the pub to watch Soccer Saturday, something like that. But my mate would get text updates on his phone. And I'd be like, oh, can you let me know the Reading score? I go, yeah, sure. Oh, you're 1-0 down. They're 2-0 down. Oh, you 2-1. 3-2. And I assumed he was just completely winding me up because these goals just got more ridiculous to the point I had to go and put final score on and be like, Christ, it's 6-4. Oh, no, now it's 7-4. Yeah, and it just, every attack at that point did just end in a goal. And then I think it was funny because then I think like 2 months later, we almost had the same incident at Tottenham where we lost 6-4.
Oh, really?
So it was a very strange season for us. But yeah, so that season comes to an end. And then obviously come the next season, Redknapp leaves for Tottenham. What were your feelings when Redknapp left?
I think it was just the realisation that we are in the Swanee. You know, we have got a problem. If he's off, we knew the chips are up. I mean, obviously, he'd left us before to go down the road and relegate them. And come back. He obviously wasn't going to do that with Spurs. But I think at the time, it was just the realisation that I think it was the realisation we're probably about to implode here.
Right.
and that is step one. And we knew he's probably going to take a couple of our players with him because we knew the money was coming to an end. And it was all of thinking, well, if we lose one of Defoe, you know, or Crouch, he's probably going to take one of them. I think he ended up taking Defoe, Crouch, and Cranchar in the end. Yeah.
He loves his Cranchar.
With him wherever he goes.
Yeah.
He's probably walking the dogs down the beach with him right now.
So when he went, obviously, I mean, it was a bit of a real shame because you guys had just got into Europe as well. And obviously, I felt for Portsmouth back then. I do now anyway, with any kind of team who aren't the top six, or back then it would have been the top four, who have to go and face some sort of European venture. It's tough. It's really tough. And obviously, losing Redknapp and losing, you know, Crouchy and Defoe, you're in trouble. And I know the next appointment they made was Tony Adams, who came in as... I know he was obviously stepped up for a bit, but he became permanent manager, didn't he?
Yeah.
What was the feeling about that? Because I would have thought the way Portsmouth were playing, obviously quite ambitiously, is that you were trying to, you know, be a big team and I mean, get right up the top. And the fact that then when one of your two top goal scorers go, they weren't really replaced. And then you've got Tony Adams coming in. And then staying. Was there a feeling that you thought, oh, come on, spend a bit of money, get us in a really good manager?
At the time, probably yes. You know, but Tony Adams talked the talk, to be honest. I actually thought he was all right. He'd come across well. You know, he knew the club. He'd obviously been there a little bit before, helping out and doing different things. But I think there was so much going on behind the scenes that whoever we had in was just on a slippery slope. Mm. You know, I think, you know, that was the start of coming in and then finding that they'd taken the chairs out the chairman's room, you know, because things were just getting lifted out of the... I mean, we should have been liquidated. I mean, the fact that we got a CVA, you know, that obviously HMRC appealed it, and had they have gone through, it got overruled by the judge, but had they have gone through with it, we obviously would have been liquidated. And I think it was unprecedented, really, to let us do that CVA because we were paying pence back in the pounds. Yeah. You know, and a lot of local firms lost a lot of money.
I was going to mention that. Yeah, because I know when we spoke before you came on, one thing we've mentioned, I'd sort of ask everyone before they come on when I email them, what's your kind of best moments and worst moments? And you did say, well, one of the best moments to, you know, getting promoted, going to the FA Cup final, all that, but it did have a detrimental effect on local businesses nearby. I mean, what was the feeling in Portsmouth when everything started to crumble around sort of 2009, 2010?
I think there was a lot of anger towards Redknapp.
Hmm.
You know, probably and almost definitely wrongly aimed at him.
Hmm.
But he was the villain, you know, because he's always obviously got this, you know, they've got the feeling that he's got a sort of underhand doing dodgy deals, you know, or just not so much dodgy deals, but more it was on his head that all these players come in at 50 grand a week, 60 grand a week, whatever we're paying them.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he's not the money man.
Mm.
And, you know, if the money's there, he'll get the players in. And then obviously he left and took some of our players with him. And I think there's a lot of anger towards him at the time that was probably misplaced because, you know, he's just a manager of a football club ultimately. He doesn't fund the players. You know, he's not paying the players. So there's a lot of anger there. But I think a lot of anger was misplaced because people didn't know who to be angry at.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of mystery as to what was going on with the finances for quite a few years. And it took a lot of people, a lot of fans, you know, had to become bloody accountants to try and work out what was going on in the football club. Because there was, you know, suddenly we were sort of suddenly, we're 100, you know, we're 60 million in debt. Oh, no, we've sold, you know, Cranshaw, Defoe, Crouch, Montari, Diarra. Oh, now we're 180 million in debt. What? You know, what's going on with the football club? Something is not right here. And obviously that was a long time after Harry had gone.
Yeah, and I mean, I do feel that we kind of joked about it earlier about the comparisons to Sunderland Till I Die, but one thing you see in that documentary is how a relegation affects not just the club, but the city around it. You know, these towns and cities that, where football means so much to them. And the staff as well at the football club, you know, in Sunderland Till I Die, you see a lot about the catering staff who are literally saying, well, you know, if they don't win today, I might not have a job on Monday. And I would expect that had there been a camera crew around the club in, you know, when you were relegated, you know, the season after Redknapp left, then I mean, God knows what you would have seen, because so much must have happened, so much heartbreak, so many tragic things happen. And that's the thing, when people say, funnily enough, you know, there's the old saying, it's only a game, it's only football, but people don't realise that one of the worst things that can ever happen to a club is relegation, because it literally takes people's livelihoods away. I suppose, I know I asked you what the atmosphere was like, but do you know much about what happened in the local area as the team dropped down, not just the Championship, and then down to League One?
No, not really. I mean, obviously, I'm not living there, or not living there anymore, but I know that they had a lot of things like catering is a great example where all of that stuff is just decimated because it's just fans are not buying, they're not coming in. I mean, we're lucky in many ways that even in League One, we were still getting sort of 17, 18,000, you know, so, you know, that side of things did pick up and get better. But it affects the city, you know, it's a city where football's the main thing there in Portsmouth. You know, and I remember going on a night at Newcastle years back, and the Friday night was, you know, rowdy and fun and, you know, it was a good night out. But the Saturday after they lost at home, you could feel the tension in the city. It was crazy, yeah. Everyone was on edge and you could feel it wherever you went. And, you know, Portsmouth's like that. It kind of lives and breathes through the football team. And, you know, it's not everyone's into their football. But like you say, there's so many outside things that are affected by it, even outside of the football club as a whole. Because a lot of people, you know, lots of local businesses lost money.
Yeah.
And, you know, they were angry.
Of course, yeah. Understandably. So my next question is a bit of a difficult one following that, because obviously of how many lives were affected. But there's often a bit of a debate that goes around. And you hear it at clubs, especially like I'd say clubs like mine and other clubs as well, who let's call them maybe yo-yo teams and championship teams, teams like Ipswich, possibly Norwich. It seems like when they should spend money, they don't. They struggle a little bit. And you sort of think, well, if we bought in, there might be a player going, for example, and you think, well, there's no reason we couldn't have spent the 8 million and got him. And there's some frustration sometimes that comes from the fans. They're like, why won't he spend money? Why won't the chairman spend money? All this. But then there's the first thing a lot of people turn to is say, well, no, well, hang on. Look at what happened at Portsmouth. Look at what happened there. There's been a bit of a debate about some of my mates who are Ipswich fans. They're kind of like, well, look, we have played it safe as houses. They are one of the safest teams financially as it goes. They you know, they stay in the black. They're okay. Unfortunately, they have gone down to League One. Before then, I think they were in the Championship for 9 years, 9 or 10 years solidly. Nothing really happened. And in the middle of the Championship as well, every season, finishing 10th, 11th, 12th. And similarly, with Bristol City. Another team, we had a guest on here, was a Bristol City fan, and they're another team who've just sort of sat in the Championship. They did pop down to League One, I think, about 10 years ago, but since then, Championship not really challenged. You know, they never got, as far as I could tell, to a playoff final. The last time I think they were at the playoff final was 2007, something like that. But one of these teams that kind of sits there, and they've got a billionaire owner. They've got a billionaire owner, and they probably could go out and buy a Premiership standard half the team, but there is, I think, this debate still that you've got to be careful because you don't want to do a Portsmouth. But then a team like Ipswich, or some of my friends who are Ipswich fans, might turn around and go, well, yeah, but that is bad that happens, and they are in League One, but we're also in League One now, but we haven't got the memories. So would you change it? I suppose it wasn't really up to you who spent the money where, but are you glad they did what they did? Are you glad that you had a few years in the Premier League with Crouch, with Defoe, with Cranshaw, with Sheringham, with all these top players? Are you glad you had those years? Are you glad you have the FA Cup final? Are you glad you have all those memories? And although it did all fall apart, are you glad you did it? Or would you rather have sort of stayed at this maybe bottom of the Premiership team, upper Championship team, and you'd probably still be in the Championship now, maybe? Who knows, maybe in the Premier League. Are you glad they did what they did? Or would you rather they played it safe?
That's a toughie, isn't it? It's a toughie, because I think had they have not won the FA Cup and that night against Milan, where we ended up 2-2 under the lights at Fratton Park, we're never going to see things like that again.
Yeah.
You know, it's highly unlikely. So personally, if you take the business side away from it, which I know you can't because that's the reality of the thing, but I would do it all again. Because it was just such a ride, you know, seeing those players at our little Fratton Park when we used to seeing who knows what come through the doors. And also not just our own players, but the other players, you know, playing team like, you know, Milan, you know, watching Ronaldinho play at Fratton Park. Who doesn't want to see that?
Yeah.
The hard thing is the flip side of that, like your Reddings or even like your Southamptons, like they're you know, they're just a team that exists. They just exist. Yeah. What's the point of them? You know, what's the point of finishing every season 16th? Who cares?
I do feel that. You know, there's been times where, you know, we've looked really good and it's like, this could be our year. And then we go and sell Shane Long. We go and sell Dave Kitson. We sell, you know, Adam Lafondre, or, you know, all these sort of players who do quite well for like half a season. They're gone. I mean, even now we're having a good run at the moment. And kind of going back to what you said earlier about going a manager with a risk, we bought in a manager who was Chicago, whatever they're called, Chicago Fire or FC or Chicago Fire, whatever they call it in America. He was their manager and didn't have great time. And he never played in England. He never didn't know much about English football. He comes in, he's been absolutely brilliant. We had our best start to the season in, I think, 30 years. And we're now sitting, I think, fifth in the table. You know, with six points clear in the Championship playoffs. And you think, well, this is great. But the problem we've got now is we've got players like Michael Olise, who came through the, you know, the youth system.
Yeah.
We've got Ijara. We've got players who are doing really well. And there's every danger that if we don't go up this season. They're gone. They're all gone. Yeah. And that's kind of, but if we had done the Portsmouth, we could have kept them and bought in a few more Premier League standard players and then really pushed and gone ourselves up or won an FA Cup. And you sort of think, oh, would I rather have the memories? I don't know. It's a difficult one. I suppose it's harder to decide that now because there are teams sort of since then who have, like Leicester, for example, who did it quite safely. They had a bit of a miracle season, but still. It's a difficult one, but that's interesting because I'm yet to have met a Portsmouth fan who, but hypothetically, they've all said, yeah, I wouldn't have changed a thing.
Because what are you doing it for otherwise?
Mm.
You know, what are we all going there for, really, apart from a bit of mental release, you know, because there's no stimulation in League One. But what are you doing it for? You're competing to win, aren't you? You want to go and win something. I think had we have not won the FA Cup and we just said, oh, well, we got to a cup final, you know, twice, say, in 2008, 2010 and lost them both, then would it be worth it? Yeah. Maybe not. Because what sticks in the memory is the winning.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. That's what you remember. You don't want to remember your dad at Wembley when you lost.
So I was quite interested to this as well. I've always wondered with Portsmouth, what's it like having Michael Eisner as a chairman? Because obviously he's quite an interesting guy, like mainly known for his work at Disney World.
Yeah,
quite a jump, isn't it? Disney World to Fratton Park.
Yeah, I mean, what it's like having him. You tell me, mate, because he is elusive. he tweets every 3 weeks if we won a game. He came with a plan, right? And he talked the talk, and he was very believable. He was very clear in his ambition, and he was clear in what they're going to do. And he was clear, we are not going to do another point. And the fans back that because, you know, having owned the club as the fans for a few years, you do get an insight into this ain't easy. You know,
he said, well, we're not going to do another Portsmouth, did he say?
Well, basically, yeah. they were never going to spend, because you know what it's like. You go down to League One, you're all singing, you know, we're all going on a League One tour. You know, 5 years later, that tour is embedded. and it's not an easy league to get out of. You know, it is a tough league, like any league, and it's a tough league to try and get out of. And he was clear, you know, we're not going to come in and spend 20 million and try and just get the best players and go up. We're going to do it in a sustainable, financially prudent way.
Mm.
And we're going to stick. And that was his approach with Kenny Jackett. You know, no, we're sticking with our man year after year. But it got to the point where, you know, it was like Blackadder, you know, where they just keep going. They keep doing the same thing and expect, well, I can't remember where they keep expecting a different result. But it's not happening, you know. And they stuck by their guns, you know. That I think they've been relatively good owners, but obviously the fans always want a bit more.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem with having tasted it. You want a bit more.
Mm. No, I bet. And I suppose the thing that's really good is that you've got, whether it be against Milan, whether it be an FA Cup final, you pack the place out as Pompey fans. And you continue to do that now, even down, obviously not during the lockdown, but, you know, Pompey fans are still going there in droves and filling the place out, even in League One.
Yeah, I mean, that's been really good, you know, to go there and see pretty much the stands as full as they were against Milan when we're playing, you know, whoever at home. It's been incredible, even down in whatever league, we've been filling them out pretty much the whole time. You know, the fans are loyal. Like I mean, it's a city that breathes around the football club, and they will go. But I think had they been going this year, I think the place would have been volatile, to say the least. because they just want to see effort.
Yeah,
they want to see the team work really hard. You know, I saw someone say the other day, you know, we're a working-class city. We want to see working-class footballers. We want to see graft, grit, and we don't really care. So long as the effort's there, they want to see you, like, fighting for that ball, even though it's going out for a goal kick, for sure. You know, actually chase it down and hunt them down and you know, really get into them. And that we weren't doing that. because we're bypassing our entire midfield for the most part. And it's you know, it's tough. I think Kenny had to go, and I think the fans, whatever happens, it'll lift the club up a bit now.
Well, was the final the other day, was that the last straw, do you think?
Yeah. But I think you've got to question the players as well there. I mean, you're at Wembley. You're playing a team from a league below. You've got a chance, some of them players, for the first time to win a medal at Wembley. Mm. If you can't lift yourself up for that, then what are you doing?
Yeah.
And that's not just Kenny Jackett's fault. You know, you've got to look at the players there and be, you know, I don't know whether they were just not playing for the manager, but it doesn't make a lot of sense in my head. You know, surely you'd want to win a final that is a very winnable final as well on paper.
Yeah.
I mean, Salford played well.
Yeah, they did.
You know, they should have been out of sight, which is embarrassing, but it's the reality of the game. They could have been 4-0 up and, you know, waltzing it. But, yeah, you've got to look at the players there. And they are the same players, pretty much, that have been playing our league season.
Yeah.
It's not like we rotated a lot of people.
I mean, that's the thing as well, is that it was quite a weird final, wasn't it? Because, I mean, it was from last year, for a start. Yeah. It was actually the... I mean, it was last year. And the fact is that had you won it, you only would have had it for 24 hours. That's got to be a record. I'm putting that. That's got to be a pub quiz. The shortest time ever to hold a domestic cup.
Yeah, well, because we would have been the first team to retain it as well, that cup, because we won it the year before. And then we would have held it for the least. You know, Pompey held the record for holding the FA Cup the longest.
Oh, really?
Because they won it in like 1939. And then it wasn't played until after the war.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
We held it for like quite a few thousand days, I think, in the end.
There you go.
That's our claim to fame.
That would have been good, because then you could have had the longest reign of a domestic, and the shortest. That would have been amazing.
I mean, that just sums Pompey up, doesn't it?
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Let's talk a bit about stand-up then, Martin, because you were saying just now you've not really done any online gigs and you're just desperate now. As like I said, as we're recording this in March 2021, we've now got what they call a roadmap to kind of things opening up again. It looks like it's going to be kind of late May that we'll be able to be gigging again. You're saying you're desperate to get back into the clubs and the theatres.
Yeah, I keep looking at those Zoom gigs with a bit of envy because they look interesting to do, but I just want to get back out live. And I've not done any Zoom things at all. I've been busy writing stuff, but obviously got nowhere to test it. So your new minutes will be it'll be interesting shaking that rust off.
Yeah,
getting back out there live and doing some untried. Untried new material. I think everyone's going to be, I'm thinking everyone's just going to be desperate to get out and have a laugh as well. I'm really looking forward to getting back live. Just, hopefully the roadmap can, you know, stick to that timing, hopefully.
Yeah.
And get us all back out there.
Did you gig much during the summer when the kind of the restrictions were lifted?
Yeah, I did a bit. I did a few different ones and that I'm pleased I did, because that was you realised how long I hadn't actually gigged for between the two things, you know, between that at the end of the first lockdown and the start of the second one, or I can't even remember now, but those months of gigging at that time,
yeah,
I suddenly realised, God, it's been sort of 6 months or whatever it was where I'd not really said any words. It's just crazy.
Did you do any outdoor sort of gigs at all?
Yeah, did some outdoor things. I was supposed to do one at Christmas time, funny enough, in a venue that where all the audience were in cars.
Yeah.
And tuning in, you know, those ones. it got canned in the end. And actually, maybe that was for the best.
I've seen we had a few of them around here, actually. Yeah, they weren't. I think I prefer a Zoom gig to a car gig, to be honest, especially ones where I heard that instead of laughing, they all honk their horns. I can't think of anything worse. That feels like a heckle.
Yeah, and also people, they can just drive off.
Yeah.
If they're like the worst heckle ever. Or they just tune into a different radio station. And they're like, they're sort of like nodding along, but they're not even, they're just listening to bloody radio or something.
Oh, God. Yeah, there's a strange one. I don't think they'll stick around, hopefully.
No.
But yeah, it was an odd one. I mean, like we were sort of chatting a bit before we started recording, and I did my first one about 3 weeks ago. And I'm glad I only really did it because I knew that I was doing it with, I knew everyone on the bill. It was kind of a local gig in Reading, and I knew everyone on the Reading scene.
Yeah,
and I thought, okay, well, I know everyone on this; it'll be fine. And there was no actual live audience, like in the Zoom. They were watching on Facebook and kind of leaving comments at the bottom, and then we were kind of acting as each other's audience and stuff. And I actually found it really good fun, mainly just to see other comedians again, like this now. Us just chatting about comedy. I mean, the only person I'm stuck in lockdown with my wife, and she doesn't really like stand up. So if ever I want to talk to her about James Acaster's latest, you know, show, or here's a new bit I'm trying, she's like, I don't give a shit. Shut up. You know, I was a little bit offended the other day, actually, as a side note. Did you see that Channel 4 thing where like five comedians and five celebrities went on? So there was this woman doing it. I've forgotten her name, but she was in Coronation Street.
Yeah.
And she was with Zoe Lyons. And my wife's a huge Coronation Street fan. And like I said, me and my wife don't talk about comedy too much. She's very supportive. She's been to a couple of gigs, but it's not really her scene. And we watched it, and whoever this girl was, she really liked her on Corey. And she went on, and my wife went, oh, just such admiration for her getting up there and doing that. And I was like, I am here. I have been here for 3 years doing exactly the same thing. And I've never once had her say that.
The only answer to that is get yourself in Corey, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Then she might actually start watching. but yeah, we had... so I've done that, and I'm doing one more in a couple of weeks' time. Like I said, again, purely because I'm emceeing that one from a pub, so it's the excuse to go to a pub during lockdown. Brilliant. But I'm kind of glad I'm doing it because I decided if I'm going to do this Zoom gig, it's all going to be new stuff. It's all going to be new stuff because I want to try and test stuff. And I felt bad because when the first lockdown came in, I think I was really quite annoyed about it because I really wanted 2020 to be like quite a good year for me for stand-up because I'd taken quite a long break. I think like in 2018 and early part of 2019, I didn't really do any gigs at all. So I'd like 18 months off, got back into it 2019 and went, right, 2020, I'm going to do 100 gigs at least this year. Yeah. I ended up doing 50. But like, and then I ended, and I was like, I was going to do my first half hour show with a friend of mine as well. Southampton fan though.
No one's perfect.
So we did that, and obviously it all went. So I decided just to not do anything. I just thought, I'm just going to sit here. And it seemed to me that everything opened up a little bit. It kind of took me by surprise. And I found summer just awful because I think I just thought it was going to be like a pause and carry on going. And I got back out there, and I would honestly say every gig I did in that summer, I died on my ass. Absolutely died on my ass. I found it, I couldn't get back into it. I fell back into old habits that I hadn't had since I was, had started out, and I just couldn't shake it and started getting sort of talking too fast on stage, and I had a miserable time. How did you find the break and then coming back? How did you find it?
I was shaky on that first one back. It was like I wanted to feel the nerves to feel good, like as in good nerves when you're kind of you're a bit apprehensive about coming out and all of that, you know, but in a good way. But I almost got the jitters at one point, which I'd not felt for years doing it, years and years. And I think the audience were a bit all over the place as well, because it was almost like they were all over the shop because they'd been let out for the first time in 6 months. And it was a weird, I think everyone's sort of apprehensive as well because the virus was still ongoing.
Yeah.
You know, even though lockdown had more or less ended at that point, I think there was still kind of confusion as to what you could and couldn't do. And it was a weird time, that little gap. I'm pleased I gigged, because otherwise it would have been an even bigger gap. And it made me think, oh, actually, now when I go back out there, I'm going to care less. You know, yeah. I really won't care about going back out there again. But yeah, it's a funny little period that.
It was strange. Did you notice as well that some of the acts wanted to talk about like lockdown and the virus and everything, and some acts didn't mention it at all? There was a weird mix of people going, well, I'm not going to talk about it, because to them it was like the new Brexit. They were like, oh, everyone's going to make jokes, but I'm not going to touch it. They went out and just did like a set that wouldn't look any different at any other time of any other, you know, 2019, 2018, whatever. And then some people came straight out with all this material, and it was so odd. And obviously sometimes it was some audiences lapped it up. Some audience, you could tell, just wanted to be like, right, we've been in lockdown. Tell us what was funny about lockdown, because we want to relate to this. And some audiences just were like, do not joke about this. This is really serious. We've come to get away from it. So you're right. Audiences were a bit all over the place.
Yeah, because it's a weird one, isn't it? That kind of thing. Because if you're not going to do it justice and you go out there and start making light of it, and then you've got people who have known people that have had it or have been very ill from it, then you're going to alienate people quite quickly with something that's still quite raw. Yeah. You know, it's still ongoing, isn't it, at that point? I mentioned it at the start of my sets, but just briefly, really, to just, you know, say how nice it is about the house and all that sort of rubbish. But beyond that, I didn't really talk about it. I've not written any material on it, really. What I've tried to do is write material that has come because of it, without mentioning it at all. And gone, actually, here's the angle, but it doesn't matter why, you know, because in a year's time or whatever, I could still use that material and you don't need to know where it's from. It's just a thing that happened. That's why I don't talk about anything serious, because I just, you know, I know there's all this, like, you know, free speech brigade and everything like that, but I don't want to offend. I really don't want to offend people, and I want my set to be, you know, accessible to all.
Yeah.
Really. I want it to be young and old without alienating people. So, I'm never just going to talk about certain things that would alienate an age group or something, because I hate that. I hate watching people where you just feel like you're totally unrelatable.
Yeah. No, I know what you mean. I know what you mean. I want to talk about your act as well, because I'll talk about the times we've gigged together. So we've gigged together twice, I think, and we've gigged together at the downstairs at the King's Head. We've done that before. And I want to talk about another gig where I think we first met, which is such a random night. And do you remember this?
It was this in Brighton.
It was a charity night run by the daughter, Alex, from the Michael from family, from Gogglebox. Yeah.
It's the weirdest night. I was trying to remember how I even got that gig, and actually I can't remember. I don't know where that gig came from.
I don't know how I got on there, because I remember she had quite, well, I think she still does have a lot of followers on Twitter, and she put something out like at the end of one episode, something like, oh, I'm looking for any comedians who want to do a charity gig. And I said, oh, yeah, I am. And I sent her the worst video ever, because I'm not, that gig that we did in Brighton, that was my eighth ever gig.
Wow. Was it really?
That was my eighth ever gig, yeah. Like, wow. And I remember we went with is it Ben Robson?
Yeah.
Ben. And it was odd, because she booked it, and obviously she wasn't a comedy booker. And I think Phil Lucas was headlining. Hilarious act. Love Phil Lucas. And he basically, I think, offered to say, well, I'll book it, because I know I have a comedy thing. She ran it herself. But if I remember right, we had an MC who did 25 minutes at the start, and then I think Ben did 5 minutes and I did 10 minutes, and then it was sort of just a bit sort of stacked, and it went sort of late into the night and all that.
Yeah.
But I remember Ben at the time being like, and Ben had done something like maybe 40 gigs, 45 gigs, and he was like getting his type five, very much sort of the London thing of getting his type five. And then he was like, oh, well, nice. You're onto your tens. And I, being outside of London, I'd only ever done 10 minutes at like open mic nights, because you go sort of southwest or whatever, you're never going to get a 5 minute set. They're all 10 minutes. And I'd done seven. And he comes and he's like, oh, wow, how did you find getting your five to your 10? And I just had to, I thought, I didn't want to turn around to you and go, guys, I'm really sorry. I am a fucking rookie at this. I think she's just like, yeah, man, just did my fives, getting to my tens. And it was obvious. It was, I think I did like 7 minutes or something. But it was such a strange but fun. Evening. I was really, the only one there who wasn't from Brighton as well.
Yeah, I think that must be. I must have got that through Phil, I think, then at the time, or maybe Ben. But that was weird because I remember ages after seeing that all that family were there in a row, like how they sit, like how they sit on the TV show. They were kind of like five rows back, sitting in the same places as the TV show.
No, this is the thing that I'll always remember because they took pictures that night. And for me, it was like a big deal. It was like, oh, this is my first gig in Brighton. And, you know, and it might have been my first gig outside the Southwest, actually. So I was like, obviously, heading a bit more south. And it was over miles away from the Southwest. Like, it's just a little bit over. And I'm going down to Brighton. I did it. And I remember everyone was a bit like, oh, you're not from Brighton. I went, oh, no. And they went, oh, you're here for the festival. I went, no. And I thought, I've forgotten his name. Joe, I think, just went, you've come all the way here to do this. And I'm like, yeah, man. Just like, yeah. He's like, okay, cool. And he was very kind. Actually, afterwards, he was like, so you didn't know there was even a comedy festival on? And I'm like, no. He went, can't, we'll go. And we went there. I think we stayed there till like 2 a.m. or something.
Yeah.
We went there afterwards. But I remember it was really good fun. And you guys were really, really lovely to me because you all knew each other and could easily have just been like, who the fuck is this guy? But you were very kind, at least to my face. And but yeah, it was an odd gig. But I will never forget that someone took a picture from me from the side of the stage where I look a lot more professional than I actually was. And you're right. And it must be a moment where I've said something that seemed to go okay, because the majority of the audience who were there are laughing, except in the middle, as you said, they are sat. It's like the mum, the dad, and the son all in the order there. And they're all just sat there completely serious faced. Like,
amazing.
It's a weird moment doing. Do you remember doing that gig and just seeing them? Like,
yeah, I didn't see them until the end, like near the end of my set, and thinking, oh, that's all those, that's them, isn't it? Yeah, I didn't even think they were there. It was such a weird room, that, because you're really high up on the stage, aren't you, as well, compared to where the audience are. You're kind of like 2 meters above them, and then you're looking down straight away at them, which is a really odd little position to be in.
Yeah. I remember one thing I remember about that as well was that it was obviously a charity night, and I remember being told to push the charity night. Yeah, cool. And then they said, oh, and if you can, push the hot wings.
Oh, yeah. so good. Those nights when you're, I love looking back on those kind of nights where, do you know what? That's Ben as well. I think Ben, and do you know a guy called Graham Collard?
Only by name, and I've not met him.
So me and him were doing a gig somewhere for a charity, and this there was a raffle on, and there was it was one of those classic kind of cut the gig up in the middle with a raffle.
Yeah.
And really tough room looking back, because no one's actually there for comedy. They're just there for a night out, and you just happen to be there, you know, on the side. You're doing it in the pub, in the corner of a pub. It's got all the hallmarks of disaster. You know, there's no segregation between the bar and the rest of the pub. You know, people playing billiards in the corner. Really, you know, like, it was shocking. And me and Ben Robson, and I think Graham Collard was there as well, we were just sort of standing around in the corner of this venue near where the makeshift stage was. And this lady came over. She said, oh, can I take a picture? And we were like, yeah, okay. So we all sort of stood in a line. And then she goes, oh, sorry, could you move like a little bit to the right? We're like, yeah. So we all shuffled along as a trio. And then, sorry, a bit more. So we shuffled again. And she took a picture of the raffle prizes. Mate, it was the absolute worst. It was as low as you could get.
Oh, amazing. And,
that was the best thing on that night. The worst.
I do feel like the night we did together in Brighton was the people were there to see the Gogglebox family.
Yeah, and they didn't even go on stage.
No, they didn't. We could have just put them up there. I mean, what would have been a nice niche is to have all four of them just sort of sat up there critiquing our acts would have probably worked better. I remember the mum heckled me at one point.
Yeah. She was really vocal.
The dad was really loud at laughing, which was great. He laughed at everything, so that helps. But the mum was literally
just saying...
He also
said if he liked it afterwards. So I remember he laughed at things, and then he goes, that was a good one.
Yeah. It was Gogglebox. It was just performing to the family and them giving feedback as they go. Yeah. Oh, that was fun. That was fun. But yeah, so that's when we first met. I remember us talking about football that night. So yeah. There we go.
It's a funny old game. Comedians talking about football.
Right, Martin. Well, we are going to we're going to finish on the big quiz time. I feel I need to remind the rules, because the last two people I've had on the podcast have been really upset.
Right.
I've had to cut them out. I'm not going to say who it was, but so basically it's 10 questions, right?
Yeah.
And I'm going to give you the question, and if you give me the right answer, you get through. If you give me the wrong answer, it's like sudden death penalty shootout, you're out. So you've got to get them all right in a row. The most you can get is 10. Because I think three times now, I've gone, oh, it's all over. They go, oh, never mind, I'll get the next one. I'm like, no, that's the end. They go, well, that's not, well, that's three out of four then, isn't it? It's not three out of 10. I was like, well, no, but 10. So it's 10 questions, Martin. If you get one wrong, you're out.
Mate, this could go horribly wrong.
Right then, so here it is. Question one. At the end of the 2002-2003 season, Portsmouth won promotion to which division? There are multiple answers. Division 1, Division 3, Division 2, or the Premier League?
Premier League.
Correct.
Do I like that?
Nicely done.
Oh, can't get that one wrong.
What is the nickname? No multiple choice answers here, so we've already gone in really, really hard. I should say today's quiz is not brought to you by the Beano or Newsround. It is bought by funtrivia.com. And I'm on an unsecure network, apparently, so we better get this done. What is the nickname of Portsmouth FC?
Pompey.
Do I like that?
Correct. That's it. Two. Joint bottom at the moment.
Right. Happy days.
Which ground have Portsmouth played all their home matches at in the 20th century?
Fram Park.
Correct.
Do I like that?
Every football team has a rival, a team that fans love to see being beaten. Many rivals include Manchester United and Manchester City, Newcastle and Sunderland, Liverpool and Everton. Who are the arch rivals of Portsmouth FC?
Scummers. Southampton Football Club.
Correct.
Do I like that?
What colours do Portsmouth play in whilst at home? Is it blue and white, white, red and white, gold or blue?
blue and white.
Do I like that?
Correct. It's all going well. It's all going very well. Which former West Ham manager and father of famous England star was the manager for the 2002-2003 season?
Harry Redknapp.
Correct.
Do I like that?
Who were the sponsors of Portsmouth during the 2002-2003 season? Was it KJC, TY, local newspaper, or Bishop Printers?
TY.
Correct.
Do I like that?
In 2001, goalkeeper Aaron Flahaven. Known as Flav, that would be easier, to the Portsmouth fans, tragically lost his life. Oh, this has actually got pretty dark. This was a fun quiz until this happened. Who puts that in a quiz?
He was a really good goalie for us. Really good. What a weird one to chuck in the middle of the quiz.
Well, I'm not doing funtrivia.com again. I want to stick to the Beano. You wouldn't get a question like that in the Beano.
No. I mean, you shouldn't get it in something called Fun Trivia, really.
Portsmouth won the FA Cup for the first time in which year?
I'll go 1938.
Get round! No, don't! Bloody!
Well, Martin, the bad news is, obviously, you didn't get 10 out of 10. But the good news is you don't go away empty-handed. I've got a gift for you for coming on and taking the challenge. A football shirt. A Pompey one, of course. Now, this is hard, this one, because I don't know you too well. I don't know what your wardrobe's like. I don't know what shirts you have, do or don't have. So,
oh, mate, that's nice.
So, I believe it's 2010-11 season, could be?
Yeah, that'd be about right.
Yeah, I think it might be that one, or if not, the season before or after. I'll take your address afterwards, and I will send that over, mate. Thank you so much for coming on. I've really enjoyed chatting with you, mate.
Mate, it's been great. And just as we talk, we have just gone on to score an own goal to go 1-0 down to Peterborough. What an ending to this podcast.
Just like business as usual.
It's as good as it gets, lads.
Quickly, do you want to say something about Southampton to cheer yourself up before we go?
Yeah, I hope they lose 9-0 again. I think my funniest fact about Southampton is that they did a fundraiser to help save the club and they had to cancel it due to lack of interest. That's my favourite Daily Echo newspaper clipping I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, man. Love it. Love it. Well, cheers, Martin. Thank you.
Cheers, mate. Speak to you soon.
A huge thank you to Martin Ratten for talking about Portsmouth FC. Do you know what I've decided? I think that's the quiz done. I'm done with the quiz. I cannot be doing with it. And it actually, do you know what? It's actually left a sour taste at the end of some of the podcasts. Don't worry about it. Anyway, quiz is dead. That's the last quiz we're going to do. And yeah, it's dead. The quiz is dead as of now. So on that bombshell, join us next week for another episode of Comedians Talking About Football. Our guest is Maisie Adam, and she's talking about Leeds, Leeds, Leeds. So I will see you then. Until then, I've been Sam Michael. Thank you very much. Follow us on social media. Get us on Instagram and Twitter. The same handle, @ComTalkFootyPod. And I will speak to you next time. Thanks very much for listening.
At the end of the day, football, it's a funny old game.
It's a game of two hours.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Comedians talking about football.
Sports Social Podcast Network.